MJ Melendez off to lefty. Deep right field, and the Royals retake the lead.
That home run from MJ Melendez put the Royals up 4-3, and they would not trail the rest of the game. An 8-3 win over the White Sox on Wednesday night to take their second of three out of so far out of the series with the White Sox. Again, they split a doubleheader on Tuesday, and again, winning last night 8-3. Much more on the game coming up here on the Sports Ticket on Kitty Country 94. Welcome in. It is 9:10 here on this Thursday, August 11th. Dusty Donis and Jason Broadfoot with you this morning here on Kitty Country 94. Other things we're going to chat about here. We have the Cubs update, and we're going to expand a little bit more upon what's happening with the Cubs coming up here tonight. We'll do that later on here on the Sports Ticket. Also, the Tigers have fired their general manager, so we'll chat just a little bit about that. NFL preseason will continue tonight. There is one quarterback that's expected to start a preseason game tomorrow night that we have been talking quite a bit about, so we'll talk about that as well. And Serena Williams, who announced that she's, well, she didn't say the word retirement, but she announced that she's going to hang up the racket coming up after the U.S. Open here this year. She's playing in Toronto this week, and we'll give you an update on that and how close she actually is to the end of the run here in women's tennis. So that's all coming up here on the Sports Ticket on Kitty Country 94. We'll start with the Royals because that's the main thing to talk about right now. And the Royals, again, picking up the win last night, 8-3 over the White Sox. Royals were up 1-0. Chris Bubich was doing okay on the mound. The pitch count was getting up at times, and he had 99 pitches in 5 1/3 innings. Ended up getting a no decision because Michael Massey had an error that led to a 3-run inning for the White Sox. I'm not saying that the White Sox weren't going to score at all. Bubich was in a little bit of trouble in that inning too, but Massey kind of had a routine ball that went right through his legs and rolled into the outfield, and there were two runs that scored off of that, and then another run would score following that error. So three runs there as the White Sox took a 3-1 lead, but it didn't last very long as Salvador Perez and Massey made up for his mistake. He drove in a run to tie the game in the sixth at 3 apiece, and then Melendez, as you heard, hit the home run to make it 4-3. And then a big eighth inning for the Royals to really put the game away as they ended up scoring four in the eighth to win it 8-3. RBIs from Kyle Isbell had a 2-RBI double. Melendez had another RBI, and then Salvador Perez had an RBI single to kind of finish things off there in the 8-3 win. So the bats were working. Offense was good there, especially late in the game. Again, as we mentioned, Bubich with another good outing for the Royals. He continues to lower that ERA because, again, the three runs that he gave up, only one of those was earned because of the error. 5 1/3 innings, no decision in the end, and Royals manager Mike Matheny on Bubich and the improvement that he's seen from him here in the last really eight starts. He's been pretty decent.
He's just taking that step every time we see him out there. We get into a bind in the second where he tries to make perfect pitches and then he gets into hitter's counts, but he just came at him and gets his pop out to the left and then follows up with a strikeout. It very easily could have been through that whole game with a zero, and we didn't make one play that cost him a little bit, and then his pitch count got him pretty high, and but he deserved better, but still was very good.
We were having a discussion last night in our Twitter group about Chris Bubich, and my cousin says, what do you guys think of Bubich? I did not know that apparently he was having an argument with another group. In another group with his brother about it, and they were not on the same page. So when that happens, it usually comes to our group on Twitter, right? Yeah. Chris Bubich was horrific at the start of the season. Like, we're talking bad.
Yeah.
Like, not good at all. From April 10th to May 11th. So the first time he went out there, he pitched 2/3 of an inning and had just 29 pitches, gave up 5 earned runs. And the Royals lost that game to the Guardians 17-3. And it didn't really improve a whole lot from there. He had 89 pitches and 4 1/3. He only gave up 1 earned run. But the thing I'm looking at with Chris Bubich this year is pitch count. And that's something that is a concern for me, even though he has improved. The pitch count is still not where you want it to be at times. And it makes you wonder if you can trust him as a long-term starter, you know, in the long term. So 64 pitches his third time out in just two innings. He gave up five earned runs. 64 pitches in two innings. He gave up five earned runs. 81 pitches in five innings. He gave up three earned runs then the fourth time out. And then his last real actual start, he had 24 pitches in a third of an inning and gave up four earned runs. This is how bad this guy was at the beginning of the season. The only reason I'm bringing it up because he has much, much improved since that point. Now, I don't have his numbers on the game log yet from last night, but I already told you his numbers from last night. But really, you look at the last eight games, really since the start of July, where he's given up 2-3-3-0-2-3-2 and one earned run. So those are great numbers, but still, you're seeing games where let's look at, say, just the first game on July 2nd against the Tigers. They lost that game 4-3. He got a no decision there, had 94 pitches in 4 2/3 innings. The next game he had 98 pitches in 5 1/3 innings, 99 pitches in 5 2/3 innings. One of those was a loss. Most of these are no decisions. He had a no decision against Toronto where he actually had 7 innings and threw 92 pitches. So that's kind of where somewhere around where you'd want to be as a starter there. I'd say you want to be no more than about 80 to 85 through 6. If you're approaching 90 to 100, you need to be through 7 as a starter at that point, in my mind.
I think the major league average is around 15 or 16 pitches an inning for a starter.
Yeah.
So 6 times 15 is 90, or 6 times 16 would be 96. So if you can get through 6 with around 90, you're on schedule for what I think an average pitcher is, or count.
Yeah, yeah, but that's average, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's
you're right. There are some days where you should be able to mow them down a little bit.
And 3 starts, well, whatever, this would be 4 starts ago. Now, he did have a game where he got the win against the Rays where he pitched 7 innings and only had 82 pitches. And I remember talking about that. It was like it was crazy because he only had 82 pitches in 7 innings, which is not normal for him.
Right.
He had 81-6 against the Yankees the next game, which is – that's good. And then 89-6, which isn't terrible. He had 99 pitches in 5 1/3 innings last night. So that's the that's always the thing that I'm going to look at with Bubich. Some of the better pitchers, if you're having a lot of success, are going to be around like the 85 through 6, probably somewhere around that area, right? You want to be at 90. You don't want to be any more than 90 through 6 if you're consistent and
right
not wanting to blow your arm out. So that's, you know, Brady Singer's had a couple games recently where he's had 99 through 7, right? Which is, again, like you said, it's going to be around your average there, and you can accept that a little bit if you're going deeper into the game. But 99 through 5 is always a concern for me when you're getting close to 100 and you haven't made it through 6 innings yet.
Right. And Bubich isn't a guy that's going to be in the top 10 in the league of strikeouts, so you need to be a little bit more contact heavy. You know, he had 6 last night, which is a good, you know, that's nothing wrong with that. We're not going to complain about that. But, you know, you look at those numbers throughout the season, you know, he doesn't have these huge strikeout numbers, which you can live with higher pitch counts if the ball is not being put in play. And now I know the Royals kind of pride themselves a lot on team defense, and so it's okay to put the ball in play when you have a team that you think can defend behind him, but he's got to be able to do that. And so Matheny mentioned it a little bit. He tried to be a little bit too perfect early and got himself behind in the count, but he was able to get out of it. Now, there are days you can do that. That's definitely, but you don't want to be putting yourself in that position very often, or else major league hitters will eventually get to you. So, but I'm going to be that little angel on the shoulder guy today, and I'm going to say, you know, this thing here says his ERA is now down to 5. That's not, you know, you're not going to write home about that at this point in the season normally. But
so in his last 8 starts, his ERA is like 2,
right,
probably 40 something,
right,
now, 250 something.
So, you know, you don't like to see the peaks and the valleys that far apart from each other, but at the same time, you are seeing some improvement. And yeah. there was a point where on this show we said, well, what do we want to see from the Royals going forward? And it's about a third of the way through the season after a long losing streak, and we said we just want to see the pitching staff, the starting pitchers, kind of even themselves out and kind of pitch consistently. We are seeing that a little bit with Singer. And we're seeing that a little bit with Bubich. So I'm not saying he's a guy that you want to sign to a long-term extension tomorrow, but I'm saying maybe if he continues somewhere around his last eight starts, will be around somewhere around these the previous eight starts, maybe he's a guy that you can pencil in as your fifth starter. And at that point, a fifth starter, you just want to get outs. If it takes a few more pitches to get 15 outs, that's okay. You know, that's what you get for a fifth starter at the with a small market, smaller payroll team. So that's where I'm at with Bubich right now. Now, if he goes out and gets bombed, and if his last eight starts of the season look like his first eight starts of the season, then all bets are off.
Yeah, it's for me, it's there's a reason those first six starts were so terrible, right? Yeah. Like there's a reason, obviously, that he's pitched well in his last mm-hmm. eight, but I don't think his last eight are indicative of what he is in the long term. That's right. Basically in my mind what I'm the way I'm thinking about it. I'm going to be wrong about it, maybe not, but the high pitch count with a younger guy, you just like it concerns me.
It is concerning, and that's
what it is for me, is like you don't want to continue to go out there and throw 99. It was 5 2/3, not just 5 1/3 last night, but you don't want to get at 99 and you're not through six yet, and that's more than once that's happened, right? Yeah. Like you're approaching 100 after a little bit more than five innings on numerous occasions, even when you're going good, right? Even when the team is playing well enough and you're pitching, you know, well enough to put your team in position to win. But it's taxing on a guy to have that many pitches and not be able to get through. And I know right now, ideally you want your starter in today's Major League Baseball world to get through six innings. Mm-hmm. And if you can do that, 7, 8, and 9, you usually have it figured out with your bullpen.
Right.
And so then you're adding another arm into the fold too, and maybe that's another thing that when you get your pitch count up to 99 and you're not through six yet, just another pitcher has to come out of that mm-hmm. bullpen. And you're gonna tax another guy's arm because you couldn't get through.
And the more pitchers you use, the better chance you have of, one, having a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, even if they're a good pitcher overall, just better chance of, one, having a bad day. And, yeah, it's I definitely see what you're saying. You definitely want the six. And, you know, old school guys would say, yeah, you never take me out before seven. And well, you know, that wasn't always true, but you know,
pitch the whole game.
Yeah,
nobody needs a reliever. What are you talking about?
right. Yeah,
at least eight. Right.
Yeah. Well, one time I pitched 94 innings in one week. Yeah, but that's we know how
so
that goes.
So I'm happy that Bubich is improving and that he's pitching well. Obviously, there's not a lot of bad you can say about the guy right now. There are Jonathan Heasley. Let's face it, Brad Keller, as a whole, and Zach Greinke are all worse than Chris Bubich right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel Lynch, probably. Daniel Lynch has kind of been up
he's
and down,
too. He's
kind of
been
too.
More he's inconsistent. Like
his ERA over the last seven starts is a little under four. Daniel Lynch is, but obviously Lynch is a guy that I know for a fact that if he can make the improvements, I want him to be in on this staff mm-hmm. here moving forward.
Right.
Brad Keller is an enigma to me. Like, he can go out there and be really, really good, but most of the times when I've turned the TV on this year and he's been pitching, he's been really, really bad. His ERA is not terrible. Yeah. He last time out, he gave up, one run on four hits, and he's been good, but Brad Keller's, it's just wild to me what he's been able to do. Now, Brady Singer, we obviously know, has been consistent ever since he came back down from the minors and had to learn that third pitch because he wasn't good enough to be in the – he's too good to be in the bullpen, as we've talked about so many times this year. But, well, okay, so why wasn't he starting right away?
Right.
His record's only 6-12 this year. But, obviously, people have seen – that's Brad Keller, by the way. I clicked on Brad Keller as I started talking about Brady Singer, too. Brad Keller is 6-12 with a 4.45 ERA this year. And like, it's just like, he's 27. He's not as young as people might think he is.
Right.
And he's another guy that's thrown a lot of pitches for this team. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if Brad Keller is part of the future of what the Royals are trying to do as a starter. I think with a good defense and a good offense, that record's probably a little bit better.
Right. Yeah.
Especially a good offense. 4.45 ERA is not terrible.
Right. You should be better than 6-12. It does kind of speak to maybe his style of getting to 4.45, which is kind of an average ERA. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't have very many games where that ERA is 4.50, so to speak.
Yeah, he gave up 8 runs on 13 hits against the White Sox on August 2nd, and then 5 days later he gives up 1 run on 4 hits. Like that's you look at his game logs and they're just like earned runs 0, 2, 3, 1, 5, 3, 4, 6 earned runs here. He had 5 earned runs here and 8, you know, and that that helped balloon the ERA a little bit, not as much this late in the season,
right?
But it is going to take it up. It took it up from 4.18 to 4.61 in one game. And so Brad Keller's just kind of up and down, right? Like, yep. Which is not untrue of a lot of these Royals pitchers right now. But as far as moving forward, Brad Keller at one point was supposed to be the ace for this staff.
Yeah.
Like, he was the opening day starter, and they were going to ride with Brad Keller. And he had a really good year, and it was 2020 in the COVID year, where he was 5-3 and had a 2.47 ERA. In 9 starts, and I think that was like, okay, Brad Keller's going to be – last year he had a 5.39 ERA. He was 8-12. He's 6-12. This year the ERA's down a little bit. But I don't know about Brad Keller in the future. He's started for 5 years for this team now, and his ERA is 4.09. He's 35-47. I mean, I know he has to have offense, and a lot of his starts have been that Zach Greinke treatment, you know, like where he's not getting run support. So that's been an issue for Brad Keller too. But you know, I don't know if he's the answer moving forward as part of this starting rotation or not. But Chris Bubich, you hope is that this continues to go the right direction. And like I said, Brady Singer, we're pretty confident in. He's 5-4 with a 3.49 ERA this year, and that ERA again is much like Singer, was a lot higher at the beginning of the year. But it's moved down, and he's starting to be way more efficient. We talked about his last start where he's placing the ball wherever he wants. He's got movement. He's got location and everything you want from a pitcher. And, his ERA has just continually gone down, just like Chris Bubich's. Like at one point, well, I mean, it was when he was in the bullpen, it was a lower at times because he was in the bullpen, right? And then he went to Omaha and came back, and that kind of changed things a little bit once he kind of got into the groove of things as a starter. He had one game where he gave up 7 earned runs, but since then it's really been consistency really from Brady Singer. And again, when you know when you're placing pitches and can do those kind of things, then you're going to put yourself in a position where you can go 7 1/3 and pitch 99, you know, you can go 7, 99 pitches, 94-6. He's had a couple of them that were higher, 105-6, but he had one with 107. You know, I mean, he's had games where his pitch count has gone high, but when he's zoned in and can understand and can control that baseball, your pitch count's going to be lower because people aren't hitting it, right? You're getting strikeouts, and he's had 2 games with 12 and 10 strikeouts, so he had 94 pitches in 6 innings, but he had 12 strikeouts, 99-7 with 10 strikeouts. Like, okay, that's how you're going to get those pitch counts a little bit lower, or you're going to extend the pitch count, but extend your time in the game as well, and the relievers only have to come in for 2 innings on the backside of it. So, again, Brady Singer right now is kind of an exception to what you see in Major League Baseball currently. You're seeing him get to at least the 6th inning in every start out of the last six, right? He went 4 2/3 on July 3rd. So this is kind of a comparison of what you want to see from a guy that is going to be that at the top end of your rotation.
Right.
And
yeah,
a guy that's consistent with that. Yep. And a guy that we feel moving forward, if he can continue to pitch, I don't feel as bad long term about Brady Singer maybe as I do Bubic, because I know he's proved
and
seems to have more control of what he's doing even when he's good, right?
Yeah, and you would trust Singer to be a little bit more on a high end, top of the rotation. Sometimes we put a little bit too much stock into when actually what we call you as a one or a two or whatever.
Yeah,
but. At the same time, because you got to have five of them, and basically you have to have six or seven to get through a season.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's kind of what the Royals are looking for now. If they can find two or three of these guys to be consistent down the stretch, or even if you have to live with some of Keller's ups and downs, if it all kind of evens out, Royals wouldn't be the only team in the league that has a guy that is up and down, and you ride that roller coaster.
Yeah, and the only reason I bring up Keller in that is because he was supposed to be at the top end of the rotation at one point in his career, right?
Yeah, maybe you just have to lower the expectations of what you think of where you want to slot him. But if it all evens out after 30 starts in a season to be fairly good, then you can ride the roller coaster a little bit and take the good with the bad and see what you got at the end of the season. But normally, you'd love to have five guys that you know what you're going to get every single time, but that's just not going to happen. We know that just doesn't happen that often. Teams have guys.
The number one starter for the Royals might be a three starter on another team, right? You put those arbitrary numbers next to them because they're number one starter on your team, but they're pitching for somebody else. Clayton Kershaw's the world are just taking that spot right away, right? In their prime, like guys like that that are just, they're so good that you're not a one starter on a lot of teams, but on this team you are. But again, I'm excited and happy that Chris Bubic has obviously figured a lot out, and he's really improved almost every time he's been out there. Again, I don't want to say, Mike Matheny says he gets better every time he goes out. I don't think he was better last night than he had been when he went six innings or seven innings and had 82 pitches, right? Like, that's probably the peak of what you can see from Chris Bubic is 82 and seven and get a win, right? And so that's what you want to see. But Bubic is doing things you definitely want to see right now to keep him steady in the rotation and feel at least okay about him going out there, which at the beginning of the year it was like, why are we sending this guy out here again? We said multiple times this guy should be a long reliever, or maybe he should be an opener and then the relief pitchers come in. I mean, that's what we were saying about him early in the season, but he's definitely made the improvements as far as being able to stay steady and get into the game. Wyatt Mills finished off the sixth inning last night. Josh Staumont, Dylan Coleman, the new guy Luke Weaver, all had one inning of scoreless relief. Johnny Cueto for the White Sox pitched six innings, gave up nine hits, but just two earned runs, three runs total. And the losing pitcher was a guy named Jake Diekman. You know Jake Diekman?
Yeah, former Husker.
He pitched for the Royals in 2019. He's from Nebraska. Wymore, Nebraska. He actually pitched at Cloud County up in Concordia before getting drafted by the Phillies. He was going to go to Nebraska County.
Right.
And the Phillies drafted him. I mean, he never actually made it to Nebraska, but he was committed to play for
former Husker, Nebraska native.
He was almost a former Husker, but the Phillies took him, and he decided to go the pro route out of Concordia there. But Jake Diekman took the loss there. Last night, the only reason I brought him up is because of the local tie to Concordia, right? The Royals will move on. They finish off their series this afternoon against the White Sox. So Kansas City has a chance to win a series as Zach Greinke's 3-7, a 4.58 ERA, and he's taking them out against Dylan Cease, who's had a really good year for the White Sox, 12-4, the 1.98 ERA. First pitch at 1:10 this afternoon at the K. Ready for the Cubs update?
I'm always ready. It's brought to you by the Navy Pier, a big tourist spot there for the Chicago this time of year. And the Cubs win 4-2 over the Nationals, 45-65 now. Wow. I mean, they had a bullpen and actually held on yesterday. So what are you going to do?
Well, they are playing the Nationals, who True. Have no hitters left. No, they probably have a hitter on them. I don't even know who plays for the Nationals, to be completely honest, other than the guys that got traded from the Padres. Right. Luke Voit plays for the Nationals. You won't ever forget that.
I'm looking at some of these, and yeah. I don't really know who they are.
So the Cubs, 45-65.
Mm-hmm.
Marquee matchup tonight with the Reds, who are 44-66.
Ooh.
Okay, it's a marquee matchup because it's the only game in town in Dyersville, Iowa tonight. It's the second annual. Well, I don't know about annual because I'm going to talk about more right. coming up here. It's the second time that they're having the Field of Dreams game there in Dyersville, Iowa. The game and field are a living tribute to the iconic 1989 movie Field of Dreams, and the field was constructed just outside and near the original field from the movie, which is now a big tourist destination, obviously, since the movie, and people go there. And is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. So they
only in the
field's not big enough to play Major League Baseball on the actual field.
No,
so they had to build a new field that, you know, with the Major League Baseball dimensions and a replica of what the field is from the movie, and obviously the tourist destination in Dyersville, Iowa now. So, again, it features two very struggling teams right now,
yep.
but neither one of them are in last place. Well, one of them's tied for last place with the Pirates in the NL Central. The Reds are.
White Sox and Yankees
White
last
Sox
year?
And Yankees last year. So just like last year, though, Cubs and Reds are going to be wearing throwback uniforms and have a bit of a sense of a nostalgia there.
Yeah, I think they tried to keep a Midwestern feel there. And, of course, Cubs have a little Iowa connection with their AAA team.
Yeah. And, you know, ideally you'd want the White Sox to play in it every year, to be completely honest mm-hmm. with you. I mean, that's the feature of the movie, right? It's the White Sox and Shoeless Joe and all that. And anyway, that's ideally what I feel like listen, if you could play a Cubs White Sox game there, that would be outstanding,
perfect,
I feel
yeah.
like. First pitch is at 6:15 on Fox tonight in Dyersville. You weren't here, obviously, last year when we talked about this game, so I've never really talked to you about Field of Dreams. What are your feelings about the movie Field of Dreams?
I don't want to start a huge thing, but
do what you want, because my feelings are probably worse
than
yours.
Not a bad movie, but it's vastly overrated in my mind.
It's one of the most, if not the most overrated movie I've ever seen in my life. And I don't even think it's a baseball movie. It's a baseball movie in the sense that that he builds a baseball field, and if you build it, they will come, right? But in a sense of actually, it's more of a movie about a guy finding himself. It's like if I'm watching a baseball movie, listen, somebody asked me one time, rank your Kevin Costner baseball movies, right? I saw this thing on Twitter or something. I said, well, Field of Dreams is last. Bull Durham for Love of the Game and Field of Dreams is how I would put
them. That's probably
because
how
they're
you gotta
both,
go.
The top two are baseball movies, right? I get it. He is, and for Love of the Game, he's a guy trying to find himself.
Yeah.
But it's based around the whole concept of he's pitching a perfect game. He's on the field. He's doing that. Bull Durham's just funny. It's just a fun movie, right? And Bull Durham's at the top of my list for Kevin Costner baseball movies. But out of those three, I'm all the time. Well, it was funny because I did a Twitter poll on it. And it was in the exact reverse order. You know, I don't think a lot of people even know about For Love of the Game, to be completely honest with you. It wasn't like Field of Dreams or Bull Durham where it was a lot of people knew it and have seen it. I actually just had come across it and watched it, and I'm like, this is a really good movie. It's a love story, obviously, about baseball and about real love, right, in his mm-hmm. life. But Field of Dreams, I just have always felt like it's just so overrated. And I didn't watch it. I'm going to tell you, I didn't watch it in 1989 when it came out.
Right.
I probably watched it when I was in high school, which was, 1999 is probably when I watched it 10 years later. But I guess I didn't get the connection a lot of people did.
And Field of Dreams has that connection with the guy and his father, and he's having some, he's having some problems. He's trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life and his family and all this kind of stuff. And, he kind of struggles without his father being around. And so it's just, if you didn't have that connection with that movie, then it's not that good of a movie. It's just not. But for those that did find that in that movie somewhere, they love it. So it's it gets a little polarizing. So, you know, some people really love it, and sure. some people...
There's really not a lot of in-between, right?
Yeah.
It's either one that you love or you just feel is like
way
overhyped.
I find
it kind
of sappy, and like, yeah, it's not... Obviously, it's not real, but, you know, but... All right, we can do this movie, but we can find like a real path to get there, I think. But
yeah, I just think as you get further away from it.
The quote that you said, is this heaven? No, it's Iowa. That's only in the movies, folks.
Jason's from Nebraska. Just a disclaimer.
Right. Yeah, it's the old joke. We're gonna make fun of Iowa a little bit from Nebraska.
Well, I always like
they're gonna make fun of us, and that's
well,
the way
it's
it
like every time because I've got relatives up in Nebraska. A lot of my dad's side of the family, not a lot, but a good amount of people live up there, and actually some from my mom's side too. So you always drive in, it says welcome to Nebraska, the good life, and I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yep.
I don't know who made that slogan, but I don't know if I quite agree.
It's the it's the surrounding border state rivalry things, you know. It's like, yeah, we have no idea just how much in common all these little towns and all these states are. But then at the same time, we want to make fun of it.
Honestly, the Nebraska thing is totally because of my family that lives in Nebraska. Yeah. And I really wouldn't have a problem with Nebraska had I not grown up as into young adulthood in the late 90s, right, when K-State was coming up in football, and my family, Nebraska fans, were just so obnoxious about everything.
No.
Like, and so that's what drove me nuts.
No, not
and,
Nebraska.
I mean, they're still obnoxious now, but when they're actually still a good football team, they had a right to be obnoxious. But I remember going to a wedding one year for the family, and my cousin Rich, he's like, oh, we got tickets to the Big 12 championship game. This was in 2000. I'm like, oh, so you're going to go watch K-State play, huh? And he went and watched K-State play Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So it's just fun banter, really, back and forth. But sometimes you're right.
So I will, obnoxious. As a Nebraska person, I will say Nebraska fans are obnoxious.
Yeah.
I, myself, am very picky with who I watch a Nebraska game with anymore. There was just this... It was the Texas thing. It was just this... It's conspiracy after conspiracy.
Yeah.
And it's not
the whole
just...
world's against
right,
us.
It's the referees and the conference and ESPN and the announcers and everybody hates us.
And not a guy that watched Nebraska in a different way than that. He just got mad, right? It's like he didn't feel entitled. He didn't feel like they were getting hosed or anything like that. Man, that when they had Ndamukong Suh and they lost to Iowa State that one year, and he was just inconsolable. Like, I had to go up and have a beer with him because he just couldn't handle it. Like, dude, come up and drink a beer with me or just talk with me or something. I can't handle it. We have a guy that could be a Heisman Trophy winner. We're losing to Iowa State. This is when Iowa State was not good.
Right. The first few weeks after Scott Frost got hired, you would have thought they hired the ghost of Vince Lombardi, you know?
Oh, yeah. And it was extreme.
It went a little too far.
Oh, yeah. There's... some fans, even in Kansas, you'd see them flying their frost warning flag, and it's like, well, that frost warning is not in effect anymore.
Can we get to a bowl game first, and then we'll build on it?
But it's like 4 weeks after the season starts, I put a tweet out. I was like, the frost warning is canceled. Yeah. The threat has left the area. So anyway. Back to Field of Dreams.
Yeah. I find it somewhat overrated.
Iowa. I don't have any real feelings one way or the other toward Iowa.
And I really don't
spend a lot of time. If you're a Nebraska fan, it's just in your bones. Field of Dreams, though, they're playing the game tonight. So, like I said earlier, it's like can't really say second annual because they're talking now that the Field of Dreams game probably won't happen last year. Hall of Famer Frank Thomas, who was a White Sox and part of the ownership group of the new stadium in sight, stated that the Major League Baseball officials likely won't want to host a game at the site next year. There are plans in place to build a youth baseball and softball complexes around the area, and construction is going to be going on during the season in 2023. So he said that the MLB really doesn't want to come back if the stadium's not prepared, and it's going to be hard to prepare the stadium and everything around it if there's construction going on around it. So if the construction is finished, finish, though, they're thinking the game would likely return in 2024. So Field of Dreams game tonight, 6:15 on Fox, the Cubs and Reds. The Detroit Tigers have fired their general manager, Al Avila, on Wednesday. The team has struggled, obviously, this year. They're in last place in the American League Central at 43-69. And if you're worse than the Royals this year, you're not real good. But they're still better than the A's. That's about it, though. It looks like, I guess the Nationals are just horrific. So the Nationals are the worst team in the major leagues. But the Tigers are a team that has the resources, and a team that at times, you know, when Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer were both there, were just straight dominant, right? Like, that was a team that, you know, when Cabrera was in his prime and all these guys were playing, I mean, this is a team that was really, really good and was on the cusp of winning a World Series. And I thought they would the year they lost to the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. I think it was the Cardinals. Anyway,
cruised
against the Yankees in the ALCS.
They were kind of, I don't know if expected is the right word, but they were kind of hoping with the expanded playoffs that maybe they could be in that race. I think kind of like the Royals, they were shooting for next year as really their target, but some of the moves that they made for this year just did not work out. Javi Baez just hasn't worked out the way that was supposed to go. I think they're a lot like the Royals in that had some arms I thought pretty highly of, but they just haven't panned out to be what they thought, and so here we are.
They're naming a lot of those guys that they, you know, the young pitchers, Casey Mize, Matt Manning, Tarik Skubal, Javi Baez that you mentioned. They signed Eduardo Rodriguez, a starter. Spencer Torkelson and Riley Green were supposed to come up, kind of like the Royals, right? Get a couple young guys up use the young starting pitching to put you where you need to go. And then, things have not worked out for the Tigers. They're 43-68, a minus 122 run differential, which is third worst in the league as well. The Royals, actually, the Tigers are now minus 134 after last night. They must have got hammered last night. What happened with the Tigers last night?
Let's see. What was that one? It is
Tigers. Well, maybe. Oh, yeah. No, this is only 3-2. Apparently, they're their story is out of date on run differential because it was 3-2. So that would only put them at minus 123. Like, that would have been a one run difference. So obviously their story is a little outdated, or the standings are wrong, one of the two. But anyway, the Tigers have fired Al Avila. He has been with the organization for like 23 years. I think it was the last seven as a general manager. I want to say he was hired in 2015. That's not right on this story, which I read another story, I believe, that said it was 2015 that he was hired as the general manager. So Al Avila is out with the Tigers as the general manager, and we'll see who they bring in, see if the Tigers can get back to what they maybe once were. Again, at that time, he was 2015 he was promoted to general manager, so 7 years as GM, but now he's gone from the organization after about 23 years in the organization. 20 to 23, or somewhere around there, is what I had read on another story here. Over 20 anyway that he had spent with the Detroit Tigers. Just a quick look at the Major League Baseball standings, since we talked a little bit about that. The Yankees are 10 games ahead of the Blue Jays right now in the AL East. The Yankees are 71-41. Houston Astros are 71-41. The New York Mets are now the best team in baseball. They're 73-39. They've won six in a row, and I believe that's the biggest winning streak in Major League Baseball. Actually, the Dodgers now have a 10-game winning streak. I said the Mets were the best in baseball. The Dodgers are actually the best team in baseball at 77-33 with a 10-game winning streak right now. Was not looking down at the bottom because the Yankees had been the best record in baseball for quite some time, and they've kind of lagged a little bit right now, I guess you could say. They're 30 games above 500. I don't know if you call that lagging, but the Dodgers are on a tear right now, 10 games in a row, 77-33. And the Dodgers are again positioning themselves. They won 8-5 over the Twins last time out. They're positioning themselves, obviously, to win. They're 16 games ahead of the Padres. The Padres are 63-51. Like, that's always funny to me, like, when you're 12 games above 500 and you have zero chance to win your division. Yeah. Like, because a team is just that good. And that's the Dodgers right now, winning 70% of their games, are 77-33. So let's look at the kind of a quick look at the baseball standings. The Blue Jays, Mariners, Rays and Orioles are in those wild card spots. The Rays and Orioles are tied for what would be the last one. And then the National League, the Braves, Phillies, and Padres would be the wild cards if things would start today. So you can find those MLB standings at your leisure if you want the complete look at those. NFL preseason really kind of opens in earnest tonight, this week. There's two games tonight, a handful of games on the schedule tomorrow night, and a handful on Saturday as well. Tonight, the Giants and Patriots will play at 6 o'clock on NFL Network. Titans face the Ravens in Baltimore at 6:30. That's only on local Baltimore, Nashville stations. So you can watch, though, the Patriots and Giants tonight. Mac Jones is expected to sit out tonight for the Patriots, so he's not going to play. You know, you're going to see that more and more, I think, with the three games in the preseason, to where this first game, they're probably not – a lot of them are going to sit. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to play. He came out the other day and said, it's pointless for me to play one series in a preseason game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I don't think he'll play. The Chiefs don't take that route. They usually play their starters for one series in this first game, and then second game now they'll get more playing. It used to be the third game.
Right.
It's the second game now where you'll play more minute, more plays, go deeper into the preseason game, and then the third game is that one where you're trying to figure out who's going to make the team. Mm-hmm. Starters aren't playing a whole lot, and that's the case here. But tonight, Mac Jones, again, not expected to play for the New England Patriots. However, tomorrow night, in Jacksonville, because the Browns have come out and said who's going to start at quarterback for them. And I'm kind of torn in the middle on this decision, because on one hand, it's completely fine to do it. He's employed by your team. He's not suspended technically right now until the regular season starts, but I don't know if it's a great PR look. The Browns have announced that they're planning on starting Deshaun Watson in tomorrow night's preseason opener against the Jaguars in Jacksonville. The impending appeal of his six-game suspension, Watson is obviously practicing with the team right now. He's with the team, and he is expected to start. They made that announcement, the Browns did, just before boarding their flight to Jacksonville Wednesday to get prepared for tomorrow's game. The NFL, as we talked about yesterday, is appealing the six-game suspension for Deshaun Watson. But they've cited, obviously, that there's evidence to ban him for at least a year, indefinite suspension, until you figure out how much more than a year that it should be. But it needs to be at least a year is basically what the NFL's saying. And then they'll adjust and figure it out after that. But it does appear that Watson will miss at least the first six games, no matter what, of the NFL season. But bylaws within the NFL say that those suspensions are only for regular season games, and you can play in the preseason. We've seen it actually with the Chiefs, right, where guys have been suspended because of PEDs or because of, you know, the personal conduct policy, where they're playing in the preseason, starting, playing a lot, and getting acclimated to the system, especially newer guys. I think Rashad Breeland was one of those guys at one point for the Chiefs that had the gun thing at the convenience store in South Carolina, or whatever. Actually, it was marijuana, and they found guns. I don't know what it all was. I think it was just marijuana, actually, for him. I'm thinking of Frank Clark with the gun charges in L.A. But, you know, it's legal. You can go out. Deshaun Watson can play. He can play all three preseason games if he wants to. And if he's going to play, if it is only going to be a six-game suspension, I understand why the Browns would do this, because they want to get him acclimated to what the offense is. It just, I think, is a PR move that doesn't look great, but hey, he's on your team if you want him to play. And so that's why I'm kind of torn in the middle, but I'm actually siding with the Browns a little bit on letting him play, because you don't know yet if he's going to be suspended for the entire year. And if he isn't, I need him to get acclimated to what we're doing here.
Just the way everything's gone with the guarantee, with the totally guaranteed contract, with the backloading of the contract to where if he were to get fined or suspended for this season, which right now stands at six, but say it does go to a year, his salary is only $1 million for this year, and it's like 30. It's huge on for the rest of the years. With all the stuff that's gone on, and just him in general playing and being active, and maybe even as a free person in society, all the PR stuff has gone out the window. So at this point, Browns might as well play him and do all the football stuff that they can with him, get him acclimated offensively, because that PR look is gone. You know, there's just, you can't hit, I think they've hit rock bottom with that. So Yeah, it doesn't look good, but none of this has looked good from the very beginning. So, yeah, you might as well, if you're the Browns, just try to, you know, think of it as a football decision, and they're doing that from this point on. And so I can't really complain that he's going to play, I guess. It's well within their rights. And I guess as a football decision, it's probably something I would do too, so. Because he's going to have that big gap at least 6 games later. So,
yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't have a problem with it, with him starting a game. If you feel like he's going to play this year, he's got to get acclimated to what you're going to do when he can come back in game number 7, right?
Right. So, yeah. Like Aaron Rodgers says, it doesn't, you know, one series doesn't do anything for him. Well, he's played on the same team forever. Yeah.
He said
Deshaun Watson is brand new to the Browns.
We know everything that's going on. Yeah. And again, there's other quarterbacks. Yeah, I think Mac Jones could maybe benefit from playing tonight, but he's not playing. Mm-hmm. It's obviously probably to keep him from being injured or anything like that. Yep. But
I saw Josh Allen isn't going to play, and I can understand
that.
Yeah, you know?
There's certain guys where you're like, yeah, that makes sense. I wouldn't play him either, especially risk injury to your franchise player. And things have changed over the last 10 to 15 years in regards to a lot of these things. Obviously, the schedule's changed. There's only 3 preseason games instead of 4. Well, I mean, unless you play in the Hall of Fame game, now there's 4 instead of 5, mm-hmm. right? For the Cowboys and Jaguars who played in that game last week. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. As far as I know, Patrick Mahomes is starting the game against the Bears coming up on Saturday. And we'll have more of a preview of the Chiefs and Bears, which you can hear on Z96.3 Through the Lake on Saturday, pregame at 11, kickoff at noon from Soldier Field, coming up here on Saturday, Chiefs and Bears. Again, we'll preview that a little bit more tomorrow on our sportscast and on the Sports Ticket. All right, we're going to wrap the Sports Ticket with this. Serena Williams, who announced, as I've said, she didn't say the word retirement, but has said that she's coming to the end of her career. She's got 23 Grand Slam championships and had her first match yesterday since telling everybody that she was about to hang it up, and it didn't go well. A 6-2, 6-4 loss to Belinda Bencic. I don't think that it's funny when you first read this story, like Serena wasn't quite ready yet at Wimbledon to come back and get her 24th major championship win. Serena's never going to be ready to get her 24th major championship win. This is 100% why she's retiring right now, because she knows that she's going to go out to the U.S. Open. I think it's calculated. And for her, honestly, as much as I don't like her personality, as much as I'm not a fan of the way she kind of carries herself sometimes on the court, I can respect the greatness that she is, and I can respect the work that she had to put in to get to this point, obviously. And I can respect what she actually does with the way she plays the game, right? Mm-hmm. The antics that come with that sometimes I don't agree with. I never will. Stealing the show from a woman winning her first ever U.S. Open because she's yelling at the line judge. Don't like that. Didn't like about 5 years before that when she said, I'm going to take this ball and shove it down your blanking throat.
Yep.
And those kind of things. And that's why I'm sour on Serena Williams, because of her antics and her act. And that's why I'm sour on Nick Kyrgios, but I don't think he's ever threatened to shove a ball down his throat or not. But anyway, but the point being, I can respect what Serena's done, but this is calculated for sure. To go to the U.S. Open on your home court, just one last hurrah, and make sure everybody knows it, because I'm not going to get a goodbye if I don't do it here. And her stay is not going to be longer than a week at the U.S. Open, I don't believe. She's just not in the shape, probably not in the headspace mentally to be able to play 2 weeks and win a championship. Yeah. And I would see her talent level's not good enough right now, I don't think, to get to the second week. But we'll see. Maybe she can find something, maybe get to the quarters or something like that. Yeah. But I just don't see her
and whatever
an
round
long
it is,
run.
First, second, third, as she gets beat, which we think will probably happen at this point, she'll get a nice hand. You know, she'll get a great ovation from that crowd in New York, because that's, you know, I don't know if that's home, but you know.
Oh yeah, she'll get the home treatment for sure. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, she'll get. And U.S. Open's been the site of a lot of her triumphs, so she'll be. You know, she'll get that nice goodbye, and then, like you said, it's calculated to put a date on it. And I think I heard her say that there's just no way she's going to do the pregnancy thing and tennis.
She wants to have another kid.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah. And so she says,
there's this comment she made that I'm not even going to bring up on the show, that it was just like, yeah, you're a woman. Like, what do you want?
She just said
she's gonna have it.
Yeah,
yeah. She's gonna have
2 feet into pregnancy or 2 feet into tennis. I can't do both.
Yeah,
and I think she just
said, basically
she
said if I have to choose between building my family or building my resume in tennis, I choose the four. Well, she, I think she said yeah. She said she's gonna choose the family. I can't remember which way, which direction it was in, but yeah. So that's why she's stepping aside. And again, I just don't feel like her stay in Flushing Meadows is gonna last more than the first week here coming up this couple of weeks. She's gonna play. In, I believe Cincinnati is the next spot that she'll play in before they have the U.S. Open. So we'll obviously track the U.S. Open when the major starts, but Serena Williams losing yesterday the first time out after announcing that she will be hanging up her racket. That'll wrap it up for today. Big thanks to everybody for tuning in on the Sports Ticket.